So just end this few verses and then. A man who follows the conduct of the virtuous, has faith and is free from envy, lives 100 years, though he be entirely destitute of auspicious marks. Right? So someone who behaves properly, then despite their background, then they will do well. Bottom of 52. Right. So that's the point is that good conduct is what makes everything work nicely. So in self-reliance, and then, okay. Let him carefully avoid all undertakings, the success of which depends on others, but let him eagerly pursue that, the accomplishment of which depends on himself. Right? No, so everything that depends on others gives pain. Everything that depends on oneself gives pleasure. No, that is the short definition of pleasure and pain. Right? So that which you are taking responsibility for, you follow up on, then things work. There'll be no problem. But if you depend that someone else is going to do it, meaning you're not doing it, you can't do it, then there'll be a problem. It'll always be a difficulty. But if it's a matter of, so in other words, management is you're doing the activity, but someone else may be doing it on your behalf, but it's still you doing it, so you're accomplishing it through your, you know, offices. Does that make sense? So in other words, if you're trying to do something that you're depending upon another temple to do that or someone else, another manager, then you'll always have a problem. So you take up things that you yourself can do, or you means yourself means you and your, you know, your, how you say, potencies and expansions. Yes, like that. Does that make sense? Right. Another way in relationship, let's say, if you're depending upon the others to do something to make you happy, you'll always suffer. But if you're acting in such a way that you're doing your duties and doing your duties is what makes you happy, then their response to that, you'll be happy. So that's the always thing. It's always, this one should do this and then we'll be okay. Or that one should do that and then we'll be okay. But you'll always suffer. The idea is that you take up those things you can do. And things that you can't do, don't worry about those so much. You know what I'm saying? So if we're saying here is, okay, well, if the, you know, the leadership, you know, in the society functions in this way, then we'll be able to function nice. No, if you look at it that way, you'll always suffer. You look at it, what can we do in our situation that we can take control of that and make it work nicely? If you do that, then you'll be happy. Right? In other words, you can change yourself, you can improve yourself, you can adjust yourself, that which you have control and responsibility for. What others have, you can't do. So you do what you can do within your sphere, then you'll always be happy. Is that okay? So now I'm thinking, because we still, it'll be one. Yeah, it's almost another 5.5 pages till we actually finish this chapter. I don't think we'll get through it in the time we have. So what I'm thinking is that Tathagata Prabhu suggested that we, if there's any questions on anything that we've already discussed in practical application, or things, something that we haven't discussed that you think is important, and then use the time that way. And then, you know. So if there's something, if there's nothing, we'll continue. Yes. Brahmacharis, brahmanas and many shudras.
Yeah, and
but you have to take the context, because a professional much of the time is a shudra. What we're meaning is professionals who they have an expertise in that particular field and they're competent to carry that out. They're given a task, they can carry it out in a very, you know, sustainable way, so that we would call a professional. Now, they may be in all kinds of capacities. You know, like a doctor or a lawyer, they're professionals, but it's supposed to be a brahminical capacity. But let's say somebody is a business manager, technically they're a shudra, because they're not a businessman. Now, if they were a business consultant, then that could be brahminical. Like that. Or someone's doing that as a business. You know, specifically, that's the point, and they just picked that as the thing. So then it would be a vaishya. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Or an entertainer is a professional because they're good at it. If they're not good at it, no one goes to see them, so they're not in the position. So the point is, professionals, you're there because you do that work so well that people want you there. You know what I'm saying? That's it.
Yeah, I understood that there's movement here, not so much able to go on being like a people who are like a influence and successful in material.
No, but what's the point? You know what I'm saying? He asked it in a particular context because he himself is professional, does things in professional ways. And he was wondering about the preaching in that professional areas. Like that. That was the context. It's not that we're saying, oh, we don't have... No, we have. But the point is how do you preach in that professional environment? You know what I'm saying? Well, the point that was being made is professionals are intelligent because they're very practical. So what you say has to be practical and has to seem to them consistent. Like we were discussing before, these elements in administration or in social considerations are very inconsistent. So a professional would not appreciate that, right? And so trying to make it modernistic by taking up some modern views and then therefore trying to apply that within the Krishna consciousness, and then that itself will make it attractive for the modern man, that's not the way it's going to work, because the modern man is always looking somewhere else. You know what I'm saying? It's like, does that make sense? You know, if you live in Los Angeles, but you don't have a vacation in Los Angeles, where do you go? Right, you go to New York, you go to Hawaii, you know, you go to Mexico, you go to, you know, somewhere else. You understand? So the idea is that, what was the idea of that one? Yeah, they're looking for something else. So people don't have problem that the possible answers to material problems is spiritual, and that spiritual isn't American or isn't British or Australian or, you understand? They can appreciate that maybe it does come from the East, maybe it does have some old traditions, maybe, you know, there's some monastery there out in the middle of nowhere up in some mountain. It's they like the idea. You know what I'm saying? So that's not the problem, as long as it's consistent and presented within its cultural context, which we tend not to do. So if you're going to do something, do it professional, make it consistent. You know, that the philosophy and the culture and all that match, then people will find it attractive. Otherwise, it's confusing. If devotees are confused, then why won't they be confused? Does that make sense? The point was is that we don't have preachers that do that. We have many who do that. You know, they can speak in that. Shivaram Maharaj does that. Govinda Maharaj does that. Bhakti Chur Maharaj does like that. Radhanath Maharaj, like this. So many. They can function in these ways. They're impressive to big people. Like we just heard that Radhanath Maharaj had a conversation with the American president for, like, I think 7 minutes or 8 minutes. You know, it's like that. You count that in minutes or even seconds. Like, I remember when we did the installation of the deities in Mauritius, then the prime minister of the country came, right? Because they're all Hindus there, so therefore a Hindu function, he comes, right? There's nobody else there. So when his you know, managers and assistants were there, they came beforehand to see the place where he's going to come. The car comes up here. He gets out. He greets, you know, whatever is the local ISKCON authorities, like that. Then after, you know, this many seconds, he's walking up to here. So 30 seconds later, he's at this point. And then at this point, he'll do this. And then after another, you know, 10 seconds, he'll walk to here. They were doing it in seconds, like that. You know, and when because it was connected with him when he came, because the ceremony, because we are who we are, then our ceremony becomes a little distracted. Then we had, I think, 25 minutes to dress full-size deities and open for darshan, because the prime minister was going to be standing in front of the deities at that time. So you just have to do it. You can't say, well, no, it takes 2 hours to dress the deities. No, you got 25 minutes. So, it's like that. It was so that he spoke for 8 minutes or 7 minutes. That's a long time. Most people go, oh, hi, how are you? Great, how's the baby? Good. Hey, vote for me, and then they move on. That's it. That was what, 7 seconds. So devotees know how to do this. But my point is that they're consistent. That's the thing. When you think of bhakti, you think of culture, Shira culture, government culture. Radhanathamash culture. So they know the philosophy, they know the culture, they live it, they teach it. You know what I'm saying? So therefore, they are able to deal with people that are intelligent, educated, and cultured. This idea is we'll make this mishmash of things like that, but we have to understand as academics, some of them, they're good in certain areas, but as we discussed before, as outside their area, some of them are quite socially dysfunctional. You get them together with a few other academics, they do okay, but if they're outside the academic environment, some of them won't do so good. Some of them will, yes. I'm not saying that it's not, but in general, it's not one of their divine attributes. You understand? So this is the problem. We're taking things from one place and this from here and that from there and making this khichdi that, we ourselves don't like eating, so why should anybody else? So those who are able to present a proper, consistent presentation, then everybody appreciates it. That was the point. Is that okay? That's why you have to get to what's the principle behind rather than the form of it, the external of it, because that you have to give an example, and the example has to come through something that it matches. But there's a purpose why you're using it. Does that make sense? Yeah. Does that answer that? Or okay? Okay. Something else? No? Yes.
One of the concepts that have survived over 50 years in business is the concept of positioning, which means that because there is a limited number of words brain can remember,
right.
But there are, let's say, about 20,000 words an average brain can remember. But there are, let's say, an average supermarket, there are 300,000 different items, different names.
Mm-hmm.
So companies are fighting for that to occupy a certain position in one's brain.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say when one thinks about mobile phones, one thinks about Samsung or Nokia, or etc. And one thinks safe car means bold.
Mm-hmm.
So what should be positioning for devotee, for ISKCON? What is that when one say devotee or ISKCON, then about what term immediately such person should think?
Well, one is they should think Hare Krishna.
Okay, yeah.
So Hare Krishna definitely should be there. But also you have the element of they have the answers, they know what they're talking about. They have a method by which, you can become happy, be satisfied with life. Right? They're able to give that to you in the context of your environment. Those would be, I would think, things that they spring to mind that would be good. Traditional. The same time, not dogmatic.
When when business companies, so one company can't own, let's say, the whole car. Therefore, they find, let's say, Volvo fights for safety.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? And this for years, for decades, and Volvo owns this safe car. Or BMW owns that it's for these young and it's dry. Yeah? It's
mm-hmm.
Let's say in Europe, I believe that for many people, for many Europeans, Dalai Lama owns terms spirituality or something. Yeah.
Yeah.
So how we could?
But we have the answers, because then these others you talk about, you know, their religion or sentiment or good or things like that. But for us, is I think the uniqueness that we are offering that other groups aren't is we have answers.
So what is the proper way to present, if we compare, let's say, like Volvo presents, well, we are not talking just about cars, we are talking about safe cars. How should we present that we are not talking in a broad, so we are not trying to own this term spirituality, but something
But we do own the word. But whether anybody recognizes it.
This is the point, yes. So what should be that you know, specific like, aspects we should pay attention to when we describe why we are needed? What is that specific? That specific aspect we do the best?
Maybe leadership.
Leadership, yeah, could be, but I would say it would be even more, because then that bumps into difficulties of, you know, then defining the leadership or what kind of leadership, though it's there. But I would say it would be more in the way of, is that we know, you know, real knowledge, you could say, you know. Hmm? Yeah, Prabhupada's books. You know, chanting Hare Krishna, going out wearing your mother's bed sheets in the streets and singing, you know, that definitely we have the how you say, icon on that, you know. Prasadam.
But then they say there are Chopra's books, Prabhupada's books, but this, what's his name, all these bookstores are full with these.
You got Ravi Shankar.
One who says that there's no such thing as happiness. And
but he's very happy when he hears that his books have sold.
So there are many books there. So what is...
So then absolute truth, you could say. Because we're presenting the absolute truth. Others are not.
But they claim they are.
Could say everybody's claiming everything, just like, you know, it's other things are quite safe also. Mercedes, them, you can take a Mercedes and crash it, and the middle section of the car doesn't crumple up, so they've been doing those experiments. I mean, I knew about that aspect from Mercedes then before I heard from Volvo. Somehow, because Volvo advertises, then they're known. Whatever you advertise, that you're known. But we're not advertising. You know what I'm saying? We always advertised before. We were always out there. People knew us. People saw us. We were constantly in people's eyes. I remember once, I think it was Sunday, because on Sunday then you didn't go out on the regular book distribution and all that, because everybody's off, so everyone's around in the city moving here and there. So we go out, you know, in the morning and do Harinam in one place, and then after that go, because then people go to another place, and then we do Harinam there, and then another place. And we were at the third place. There were only like about six of us, right? And then somebody came up and says, "You guys are everywhere. You know, I saw you in the morning, and then I saw you here, and then I saw you there." He says, "How many of you are you? It must be hundreds of you." You know, no, there were only six of us, you know? So that element of just that people don't see us like they used to. You know, so if we're seen, because the point is that the Volvo ads weren't there, no one would know that it would be safety. You know, they're probably the first ones that caught on the element to, in the same sentence, say something that the wife would want about the car and the husband. You know, The car, you know, 0 to, you know, 100 in, you know, what is it, 6.3 seconds, you know, but so therefore you can get yourself there quickly, but safely. You know, so you always have something that the man will want, the woman will want. So they're one of the first to do that. You know, so it's just a matter of that you're out there and people know you're there. But, you know, right now we're, you know, tussling with, you know, is Hari Nam, you know, a bona fide way to present ourselves? So people don't see us, but that's how people knew we were there. People appreciated us for that. One devotee was telling me he had read an article about when, it was back in the 80s, this movie came out, Blade Runner. And it was about, it was in the future, like in 2020. So very bleak. Everything's black and white and rainy and disgusting all the time, you know, in Los Angeles. And so at one point, and so, you know, the people watching it, everything's very sober. And then at one point, the Hare Krishnas come out and they're doing kirtan in the street and says, and the article said that everybody in the theater started clapping and whistling. You know, at least something didn't change, you know, like that didn't. You know what I'm saying? So people appreciate us for that. The problem is academics have their own viewpoint that generally, as I mentioned before, doesn't necessarily have anything to do with reality. It's how they perceive it. But the common person doesn't think like that. But their idea is that the common person is not intelligent, so what their view is not important. So when they say everybody says, it means them and one or two other academics. Are we getting anywhere here? The point is that how we make ourselves known by being out and doing Hari Nam, doing kirtan, preaching and distributing prasad, if we do that, everybody knows us. Like, I remember in the 70s, going to a university program at UCLA. So it's considered one of the, you know, better of the American or even world universities. And it was a lecture hall. So there's like 300 students in the lecture. Lecture, I think, was something, you know, either comparative religion or something like that. And the person giving the class was the temple president, right? Temple president had joined like when he was like 16 or that, so he had never gone to high school. But he is the considered the authority that's speaking on religion to undergraduates at the university. He's invited by the professor, and I think he would give a class there at least once, if not twice a week. You know, all during the whole term. So it's like, when we do these things, people see us, they know us. And it's simply that, like you said, the prasad, the kirtan, and the philosophy. And, you know, we're supposed to be nice and blissful. So if you do that, then, I remember I was riding on the subway in New York. And I was with this other devotee, and we were in you know, devotional clothes, which generally you won't see anymore. And so then we had over this couple of days, and during 2 days, one person came up and said, you know, wow, where are you guys? I haven't seen you guys for years. Where are you? You know, because nobody goes out in the dhoti, so they think we don't exist, right? Then we had others where I would be there talking with that devotee, and because, you know, we're talking, when devotees get together, they talk and they laugh and they like things like that. But if you look at everybody else on the subway, no one's laughing, no one's smiling. They're all just sitting there very sober. So I think it was over 2 days, we had two people come up. One of them said, is there something you're doing that I can do? He wanted to know, you're doing whatever you're doing and you're happy. So is there something you're doing I can do? You know, because I'm just an ordinary person. I'm not a monk. Like that. So they can immediately see when these are there, then it's nice. Does that make sense? Or you have it when you have these big festivals and all devotees come from all over the place, many senior devotees. So then one of the things I've heard commented regularly at these festivals is that when the senior men get together, you know, just even for a few minutes, they're walking together and talking or interacting, you know, that the other devotees are so impressed at how nice it is. The quality of the interaction is very attractive. So these are the things that people would notice about the devotees. So if one can do a nice campaign like that also, then I would say that would work. But then we should stick to these things that we want to target, which is the philosophy, the books, the prasad, you know, the answers to all questions. That's before BBT used to do that. You know, it's like, you know, the Bhagavatam, it answers all these different things in all these areas. We don't say that now, but before we did. So if we just do this and say it and make it known, people like it, people don't like it, what does it matter? Because the point is that if you make it known, there will be people who like it. But what we're worried about is some people like it, but somebody doesn't like it. But Prabhupada himself said that you know the success of the mission by how much opposition you have. Because if you're a nebbish, does that make any sense, that term? Nebbish. Nebbish. I think it's German or Yiddish. It means basically a nothing, you know, nebish, N-E-B-I-S-H, I think. It means a guy who doesn't do anything, nothing special, nothing standing out. You found it? So.
Always very well.
Oh. Yes. So, then. This nebbishness, yes, nobody complains, but nobody thinks it's special either, right? But the point is if people are taking a stand, means that people will take a stand against it also, right? So we shouldn't talk about God because there's atheists, because the atheists won't appreciate it. No, we talk about God, and then if we're talking strongly that the atheists feel that we're saying something that's threatening their philosophy, then they'll strongly come back. It's going to happen. But this idea is that we're going to please everybody. There is no such thing. No intelligent, practical person on the planet who is successful ever thinks he's going to please everybody. Just like you're saying, they pick a niche and that's it. But everybody knows, like you said, Volvo, but they know it for that niche. So the thing is everybody will know us, but they'll know us for, we're the guys with prasad. You know, Prabhupada said we're the kitchen religion, right? You know, because we got great food, right? You don't think of, when you think of Christians, you don't think of food, or Buddhists, you don't think of food, or Mormons, you don't think of food. Jews, maybe, yes, you think of food. Okay, so then there's food. Okay, so, but the point is, you know, then it's, that's something that stands out, you know? So food is there, you know, philosophy is there, the kirtan is there. So these are things we can do. Like now, kirtan, which used to be exclusively our thing, now it's somebody else's thing. There's kirtaneers. You go on the internet and look up kirtan, and probably 9 out of 10 is not us. You know, so all it is just we get out there and do. We know. I mean, at one point it was like, what is it? Sadaputta and what's the other one? Drutakarma. They were known on the western half of America to be the authorities on anything that's, you know, extraterrestrial or, you know, UFOs, this, that, and that, because they spoke on it from the scientific point and from the Vedas. So they were the authorities in people's minds. They had a big problem, they would invite us. The academics, they hated us. They were saying these guys are bogus and all. In fact, if you want to, you know, what is it, that forbidden archaeology, look on the back, you can see, what's it, Lahiri or Leachy or what was his name? Can't remember. He was like the man, or still maybe the guy in archaeology. You know, when you think archaeology, you think of him, right? And so they have his comments on the back. You know, he's just saying it's a cornucopia of dreck. Cornucopia is one of those like mystical or mythical like horns that just unlimited, you know, food and prosperity comes out of. And dreck means like, you know, garbage or nonsense. So it's a cornucopia of nonsense. It's just unlimited, fabulous, amazing nonsense that comes out of this book. That was his comment. And so they put it right on the back, you know. You know, is that, you know, this is what these guys think about it, you know? And, you know, naturally then, you know, so they go to all the programs. They don't invite the guy who wrote the criticism. Though he's established within the academy as the authority in anthropology. But as far as people want to hear about and that, they want to hear from us. So that's the thing, is that if we just take our own natural strengths and stick to that, we'll be good. Because when we go into these others, as I was mentioning there, we're not, how many devotees are actually that professional? There are a few, but they're not the ones given the lead. You know, just as in a farm community, the farmers are not the ones that say what to plant. You know, it'll be some group sitting in an office somewhere. And by the time they decide, the season is over. You know, so like that. Does that help?
Yeah, it helps.
You know what I'm saying? So to find the, you know, the ideal words, you know, that's another thing. But I would take it, I would follow how Prabhupada does, is he gets these prominent words from how the acharyas use it. Like the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, that comes from Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur. Krishna Bhavanamrita Sangha. The International Society. So the Society of Krishna Consciousness, right? And then from the Vishvaishnav Rajasabha, that gets your international, also that element of. So you get the International Society for Krishna Consciousness for that combination of those two. So you just have to look in the books and see what Prabhupada's always bringing out and those aspects, and you can use those terms because they're very good at using terms.
Could you explain then, for instance, bookstores are flooded with this, I remember, books of Osho. Osho or books of Dalai Lama.
Right, and, because somebody goes there and sells them to them.
But somebody, gradually they own certain terms, what is the reason why Prabhupada's books are not available in bookstores?
From what I've heard from the BBT officials is the bookstores, or because you generally have these distributors. You don't go directly necessarily to the store. If you go to the store, it's not so much of a problem, but you have distributors. And then they have their stores that they'll put them into. Their problem is that they'll put a price on it, put it in the store, but a person could buy it on the street for cheaper from us. So they want it that we don't sell on the street, they'll sell it in the store, then they have no problem taking our books. The problem is we sell them on the street, and so that they can get them cheaper, so we undercut the market, and so then they don't want to get involved. That's been the problem. So in areas where there is no book distribution, then hey, sell it to the distributors. That's been their problem from what I've heard. But it's not that people couldn't still work on it. Probably there's some way to work around it. That was the difficulty they had back in the 80s and 90s. Now it's, you know, they could try again. Does that make sense? Because no one's on the street selling Osho's books. You know what I'm saying? Unless you go into a bookstore and look in the self-help section, you won't see his books. Like that. But previously, you know, we'd sell, you know, millions of them on the street, so the distributors would be doing a small portion of that, so for us it wasn't as valuable to push that, but now maybe it will be. Does that make sense? So then it's just a matter of checking locally what is the thing. So it's like there in your place, you can see, go and talk to the bookstore people and ask them about it. You know what I'm saying? Because maybe it's different over there.
Yeah. In Norway, the Jyotishvar Prabhu has been out selling them to the bookshops and like these spiritual shops and all. So they all have Bhagavad Gita, Sri Prabhupada.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I remember as a kid, means we had them in bookshops, but we just didn't have that much because it was. So it would be like a shop would have them or something, you know, rather than these big distributors that are nationwide and stuff like that, because BBT was looking at that. But I remember as a kid going into, it's only afterwards that going in and looking at books and finding, you know, Prabhupada's Gita. But at the time I didn't know what it was, but, you know, then, you know, some months later then bumped into the devotees like that. So, you know, they are around, but it's not on the level that what you're discussing, that really, you know, very serious presence like that. But I think when there's a good presence in libraries like that, that I think we've done quite well. That. Is that okay? Yeah. Yes.
The question of I'd like to know here behind the Kali Yuga, so how we should we apply these principles of the duties of times of distress? We didn't go that far, so I was thinking that, for example, for the Brahmana, he might not be able to, you know, maintain himself just by the Brahmana duties.
No, then he can take up Kshatriya or Vaishya. Like that, but in Vaishya it's recommended trade. And within trade, something that people actually need. Right? In other words, not something that they don't need, so you depend so much on advertising and presentation and all that to sell it. Something that people actually require. And then, you know, so you don't have to use too much illusory aspects to sell it. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's just like, let's say, just for example, if you're selling cloth, white cloth people require, right? And so they just come in, look at the cloth, they like it, and then they buy it or not, right? But let's say something like a sari, that specific sari isn't required, right? Wearing one is, but that specific one's not. So it's not like the white cloth where they just come up and just touch it to see if the quality is good and stuff like that. Here you have to take it and you know drape it nicely see when they throw it out. They don't just kind of take it out and yeah, here it is. They take it and they have a way of throwing it. It just kind of billows through the air and that and you know like that. And so then you just kind of watch it and then they will see your reaction. So, you know, there's a little sparkle, then they know, okay, this is it. It's just dead, then they know, okay, that didn't work. Then they'll get another one and, you know, like this. You know what I'm saying? So it depends. It's so much more work, and you have to spend all day folding them up. You ever seen, you know, somebody leaves, there's a pile on the floor. I'm not joking you. You know, this high, you know, and it's like 3 meters, you know, these big shops. There's a pile like that after, you know, a few ladies have gone through. And that wasn't all day. That was just, you know, 4 or 5 ladies went through. So all that thing, the presentation, redoing the shop, so that generally a Brahmin would avoid that. He would get into something that doesn't require that. But for Vaishyas to do that, that's their cleverness. That's their, because that is their job. So they'll always think how to improve, how to create that need. But a Brahmin, he's supposed to be, you know, studying and teaching and these things. So if he needs something more for maintenance, he should have something that's quite direct. You know, very straightforward, no frills, like that. Doesn't mean that it's not nice, but I'm just saying, is that, you understand the difference? You know, you don't have to create a whole thing about it. Because the point is donations didn't work. So that's why he would go to the Kshatriya duties. You know? So you just have to see is that if he's still situated in there, then he's taking these up, then he can work within that environment, but he's working like the ministers. They're not so he'll work in that environment, but that's not ideal. Does that make sense? You know, so the Brahmin working for the king, he won't be able to. The mentality would be different than the Brahmin who works for the deities or works for the Acharya. You understand? Because in Brahmins, you have a class that they're, at least in South, they call Shrikaryas. Means they're expert managers. The Brahmins who are expert at managing. So there's considered 3 levels of them. The top level is who's the, like, secretary to the Acharya. Like Srup Damodar to Lord Chaitanya, that kind of level. Then the second level is like the head pujari, you know, or festival manager and things like that, that the pujaris would take like that. So then all kinds of organization and management. It's not just based on the studying and teaching. Right? And then the third is then he's a minister for the king. He's somehow involved in the administration. He takes that responsibility, gets it done. You know, so he might have the treasury or might have, you know, some other aspect. And so he does that. Does that make sense? So he's still a Brahmin, so if someone gives him a donation, then that still works. But he's doing it as a Brahmin in that capacity. But if he actually takes the position of the Kshatriya, then now he can't accept donations. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Yeah.
Regarding the behavior towards superiors.
Behavior towards superiors.
You spoke about Kalabara and his father.
That's the next verse. Let him never offend the teacher who initiated him, nor him who explained the Vedas, nor his father and mother, nor any other guru, nor cows, nor Brahmins, nor any men performing austerities. That's just discussing like that. It's not that he can't do that. It's the point that he's doing it out of respect. See, this is where the cultural problems, the lack of cultural heritage becomes a problem, because we can't see is that respect means I never tell anybody above me anything. I don't say anything. I just say yowza. You know, that's it. You know? And so then that's a problem, but that's not what it means. Just like the wife is in a junior position, it doesn't mean she's not telling the husband things that'll be for his benefit. You know, that shirt's ripped. If you wear that, it won't look good. Wear this one. You know what I'm saying? It works within it, but the point is the other one's still the one who's leading, making the decision. He's saying to his father, if you do this, that'll be nice for you. But it's up to his father to make the decision. But the father's made the decision that Prahlad goes to this Gurukul with Sanda and Amarka. He goes. Because that's his father.
The thing is, he got offended by this instruction.
I bet if it had not been in connection with Vishnu, and he said, you know, dear father, you know, you're dealing with these planets in this way, and, you know, and so and like that, but if you did like this, then they would, you know, feel more obliged, and then instead of you having to, you know, use so much endeavor and force to get them to you know, bend to your will, they would willingly doing it, seeing that, you know, the greatness of, you know, how powerful you are and also how kind you are. And then you go, well, that's smart. You learned something, you know, because that's niti. You go, oh, okay, that's a good point. You know, you think about it. But here it's because it's connected to Vishnu. So even if he said anything connected to Vishnu, he would be offended. It doesn't matter what. So that's the point. But he's speaking it nicely. He's trying to do. So when it says that, don't speak, how do you call it? Let him utter no disagreeable truth. So the principle of God consciousness, even if somebody doesn't like that, that's not what it means. That doesn't mean you don't tell them about God. It means don't get into an area that they don't appreciate. In other words, use an area that they would appreciate. That would be the easiest. But if you're very expert, you can go beyond that. Like that example of Prabhupada. You know, in the 70s, when it's the height of, you know, how you say, student, you know, revolution and equality and all that kind of thing. And especially that was very, very, I could say, strong in Sweden, you know, at the universities there. And Prabhupada at the university there chose as a topic the four, you know, the varnas. And talking about first class man, second class man, using these words, third class man, fourth class man. He could have just said, you know, the intellectual class, like every society has it, and so like that, and you're students, so this is the intellectual environment. He could have used it like that. No, he just directly in their face, first class man, second class man, you know, just to get them going. Because it's like they're jumping up and down, but it's only a feeling and mood, you know. As soon as they finish college, they'll go get a job and couldn't care less because they got to pay their mortgage. So it's like it has no meaning. It's just some youthful, you know, exuberance, you know, like that. And their attitudes and everything like that. So after he finished the lecture, then, you know, he asked for a question, somebody raised his hand and said, you know, so, you know, what class man are you? You know, expecting him to say, well, I'm first class, and so I think this, and then they'd start yelling and screaming. That he said, I'm fifth class, servant of the other four. Bang. There was, they had no problem. They had nothing to say. So he just set them up to get them into such a thing that when you gave the right answers, also exactly what they wanted to hear, you've cleared everything. So that's also a method. Bring out all the things that they don't like that, but explain them nicely, but they still don't like it, and then explain something that holds it all together. Then they have no argument. You've already defeated them by your good qualities. But then you have to have the good qualities that it talks about here to do that. So that's why, even though the expertise in presentation and knowing, you know, argument and dialogue, still more important is the character, because that's where it'll stand out, because you can't maintain it. Like you were saying, is that the conversation will go and they'll say something and then give some example, and then you contradict that, and then they'll make some other thing, then they'll start threatening or talking about their position, and then eventually ends up with just, you know, being really upset, emotional. So they're unable to maintain the position because of the qualities aren't deep enough. You know what I'm saying? So it's just like the example of Rupa Goswami when he's talking about emotion, right? If you have a puddle and you take a little rock and a little pebble and just throw it in, immediately the whole thing is all shaking. But the ocean, you know, is moving like this, but the mountain and the ocean doesn't move. Right? Does that make sense? So when you, it means when you, or you take, if you want to keep it within water, that deep water, it's the whole thing doesn't move because you've thrown in a little pebble. So the depth that is there in the character and the qualities, then it can't be disturbed in an environment that would, in others, provoke so much response. Does that make sense? So it's not the expertise in the discussion as much as the quality. You know what I'm saying? So that means the sadhana and one's devotional practices are still the most important element of being a good leader. Because to be a good manager, that if you have the character, people want to follow you. Okay. Planning to plan.
And that was kind of
a deep
eruption.
But so you just have to say is that, is that what you're getting to? You just have to say is that, no, I'm not criticizing. I'm just saying, why are we just starting now?
That's why it's already challenging.
Why is Atato Brahma Jigyasa? That's a challenge, you know? We're out there, we're atheists, we're challenging God. You know, now is the time to inquire about the absolute truth. Why? Why, God? Why? You know, so, you know, what does that mean, why? If they can't handle why, I mean, that's one of the things, you know, first graders learn the word why. So it's kind of like they've been used to it for a while, you know? It's not a matter of questioning. If I don't, so then that means they want me to be a blind follower. The very thing that they're saying, that the reason that we don't want, you know, the gurus to be so powerful because there's all these blind followers and all this and that and then. So, but you want me to be a blind follower. I'm asking, why did we pick strategic planning? Why that? Why not the law of attraction? Why not goal orientation? You know, why not, you know, rich dad, poor dad? Why did we pick strategic planning? It's just one of the many, you know, structures for planning success. Why this one? Because then we know what it is. I know what I'm dealing with. You know, it's just like you say, you use the spoon for, you know, why should I use the spoon? Oh, you're challenging. No, I just want to know why. Like that. Because if you use the spatula, you won't be able to pick up much dal to serve the person. So that's why I use a spoon, because it'll hold more. Oh, okay. So that means dry things I can use a flatter thing, and wet things I use a round thing. So that means I don't have to be explained every time. I can use my brain. But here they want you to just be, just when they tell you, you do that. And if they don't tell you, then you don't know what to do. You just present. So that's what you want. You want a bunch of people that just do what you say just because you happen to be in charge. But if I say that my people should do what I say just because I'm in charge, then you send in a committee, you know, to have an investigation because this is not right. So, I mean, what does this mean? There should be some consistency. So all it was a simple question. Why did we choose strategic planning? That's all. You know, and as we can see from our discussions on Shankar, Shapradyumna, Aniruddha, and Vasudev, is it deals with 3 out of 4. So it generally deals directly with the maximum amount of elements, while the other ones only generally deal with one, and then take the others for granted that they'll happen. Just like strategic planning is taking it for granted that you'll be inspired, right? They've done Sankarshan, Vasudev, and Aniruddha, right? The field, Sankarshan, the plan, Vasudev, and the result, you know, the goal, Aniruddha. But Prajumna has been totally left out because the people who do actually use it are inspired. They want to get things done. That's why they're there. So you don't have to inspire them. They just need to know how to channel that inspiration. But the law of attraction is for people who kind of have everything, but or at least is there, but they don't have the inspiration. So you create the inspiration. If you create that, naturally they'll need and they'll make the endeavor. You know what I'm saying? So do we pick it because of that, because it's the most complete? But then how are we getting people inspired? So by presenting we have this plan, you know, of all these things, then people get inspired, so then you have all four. You know, it's something is this. But otherwise, this thing is there. It's because they don't know. You ask why, it's because they absolutely don't know. That's the reason. But you don't have to bring that up. Point is, you don't want to do that. Because you see, like in, I think it was Gargi. She's the daughter of, you know, I think Garga Muni. I'm not sure if it's Garga Muni, meaning who is the priest for Krishna, or if it's another Garga, Gargacharya. So his daughter Gargi, she was liberated. She's mentioned in, I think, in Vedanta Sutras, you know, when they're giving example of something, she's on the liberated platform. So they were having a discussion trying to establish who is the greatest scholar at one of the sacrifices of Janaka Rishi. So then different people were discussing different things, and, you know, very quickly becoming obvious that, you know, certain ones are expert in one area but not in another. But Vishwamitra, no matter what subject you brought up, he knew it down to the finest detail. You know, some certain obscure yajna, he knew all the terms and exactly what to do and this and that. So then it came to the point where everybody else had basically dropped out, you know, of you know, trying to establish themselves or be recognized. And now everyone was simply asking questions to Vishwamitra to find out if there was an area that he didn't know. Right? And so everybody had asked everything, and they had stopped asking. So then Janaka Raj, who's the king, you know, so because he's chairing the kind of, you know, or facilitating, excuse me, the whole assembly, then he asked, is there any other questions? You know, otherwise then it's, you know, well, obvious that Vishwamitra is the greatest. So then Gargi stood up, says, I have a question. So she started to ask him about transcendence, you know, the soul and relationship with God and those things, because that's not what he knows. He knows all the material sciences, but he doesn't know Paravidya, or transcendence. He knows there's 14 books, so he knew the other 13, and that's all anybody else was discussing also. So amongst that group, he was the greatest. So she started asking on transcendence, and he didn't know, and he was really getting upset and frustrated and angry. And so seeing that, because she was liberated, she doesn't have to prove anything, then she immediately stood up and announced that he was the greatest pandit. right? Calm down him, calm down the assembly, everyone's satisfied. Because otherwise no one knew about, except for Janakaraj, no one knew about transcendence. You understand? So immediately you start, if you start bringing something out, but if you see you're getting such a bad reaction because there's just no understanding of it at all, then just stick to the particular point to how to make it work. You know, no, I just wanted to understand because why these three? Why not four? Why not two? You know, because other systems only pick one or two. Why? You know, and De Bono chooses six. You know, so why do you pick three? Just I want to know. Right? And then if Gopal Bhatta's there, you'll get an answer. And if Gopal Bhatta's not there, you won't get an answer. Because he's the only one that really understands the method. Because it's what he uses. Technically it came from, the term comes from, I think it's from the 50s, that's what the American armed forces use. That's how they make their plans. Right, because they're enthusiastic. They want to go out there and you know, fight with something, capture something, kill something. You know, so they're inspired. You know, so you don't have to worry about that. They just need, okay, we have this many men and this much weapons, and they have this many men and this much weapons, and this is the situation, and we want to do this, take the country or win this battle or that. So what is our plan? So you don't have to inspire them. They're already inspired. You know what I'm saying? So it works. It's a practical thing. I mean, the army's using it then. It's still using it. So that's why it's, you know, in the managerial circles, then I think it had its day and now it's not. It's moved on because academics talk so many things. But in reality, you know what I'm saying? Because it's like this. If I present a system and because the person who's coming as a student is not a manager, then they'll get inspired and try to use it in different ways, and then it won't work anymore, won't work for them, because they're not a manager. Because you have to be a manager to use management, just like you need to be a cook to use, you know, teaching and cooking. You know, let's say you have a person who does not have, is tone deaf. Can you teach them music? So one teacher will try, and it won't work. So then after a while, all his different tricks have been used, so then they'll go to a different teacher. You understand? But they'll never learn music. So that's why then something like it, that as practical as strategic planning, will at some point lose favor because it, like all the others, didn't work for a non-manager. But for those who are managing, then they still use it.
So anybody can see the goals, even if he doesn't understand the system.
Yeah, so
he can see the goals which it brings.
He can see the goal. So that's supposed to inspire him to, you know, look at the field properly and make a proper plan.
Seems to be that the goals kind of not very much like distributing books, opening temples, and
making devotees
like Prabhupada. Nowadays, it was mentioned in one meeting by one person, the others were kind of disturbed by him mentioning these things, like this is old times, this is already have been in the past.
In the past? That means, what does that mean? So what do you want to do? You don't want anybody to be impressed and come forward in Krishna consciousness. You don't want the temples to do, you don't want people reading our books.
But now it's more like, it's in the terms like the karma is used by defining the community or religious society. Like they say, if we don't increase the number in a certain pace, the little religions, they fell apart.
Okay, so that means making devotees, and that means then you have then they should be trained in Krishna consciousness. That's the books.
They don't call it like this. It's just increasing membership who will eventually support the society.
Okay, so that means you just want a monetary foundation. So the thing is if you have a bunch of brahmacharya sannyasis, you don't require that. So that means, then they're saying is that they require it to take care of the households, and even the households who are brahminical don't require it, so they require it to take care of an administration. So that means you're generating an administration that will create the people, that will give the money, that will maintain the administration.
Yeah, that's
so that's a complete circle. Social development, as if any office ever did that. Okay, so Is have you ever seen on television or in a magazine, any of these, you know, Newsweek, Time, or, you know, whatever it is that's popular, or on a television show, anybody talking about the great job done by this particular government office, how they've done so much benefit for, you know, some aspect of the community? Or it's always a person who is taking this up and doing it themselves? Have you ever heard of a government commission that has done benefited socially work? Have you ever heard of it? I mean, I haven't. That's why I'm asking. I mean, I've heard of a commission doing something like, okay, checking to see that the drugs that are on the market don't kill you, you know, or that, you know, there's certain, you know, legal things are done, people are paying their taxes. They do those kind of things, nice, but I've never heard. In the Vedic thing, no one ever talks about having an office that takes care of community development. You know what I'm saying? You can have something that organizes, just like you have the temple, there's an office to organize. Someone sits down and makes a schedule. But it actually happens when the person who makes the schedule and the people who are going to apply it go out and do it. Now, here they're simply saying if we have the offices, then the community will develop. But since when have offices and community, what's the connection between an office and a community? Where's the logic? But this is the point, is they don't connect. There's no connection, right? Like I can make a connection between a tomato and, you know, pasta. You know what I'm saying? But let's say I say a tomato and the highway. You know, the Autobahn and tomatoes. So committee and community, except for the C, There's you don't connect them. They're not a natural connection.
Like we have an office for
You have an office, but who's going to do the work? So they're thinking if we have the office, because they're taking it that they're looking at it like this: in the 80s we had all this stuff, but it wasn't all coordinated, so therefore it fell apart. But now they're talking about we won't do any of those things of the 80s, you know, devotees and preaching and all that. We'll just have the office, and now it'll work. No, if they had organized more what they were doing then maybe you could say there would be a consistency. But the point is who's in that office? People who know how to do it? Or just some people that like sitting in an office? You know what I'm saying? To train this young couple in Krishna consciousness, then what is required?
Brochures.
Yeah, we have one. It's called the Bhagavad Gita. Yeah, counselors are those who are in the local area. The office is going to provide you people in check. It's sitting in New York. It's going to make sure that you get people in check that will sit down there and for the next 10 years cultivate your community. But it doesn't do anything in your place. Okay, so therefore all they have to do is have a temporary office that creates a few brochures, and then once that's done, you're it's over. So it's a temporary thing. So then that's fine. Okay, you need to produce some literature on these things. Great. Just like you want to have a school, you have a, you know, curriculum development, and when you've done the English curriculum, it's done. But you don't have to have people developing English curriculum even though you have one. So once they've approved of some way to study Bhagavad Gita, it's done. No? Or do we have to have a group of devotees that go on for the next 100 years working out how to study Gita?
They go monitor the situation, see.
They monitor the situation. So that office of 3 or 4 people is going to go around and see that it's happening everywhere in the world. How will they do that? Are they managers? Are they managers? Or are they office people? Yeah, but where are the managers? Because you said they will see that it gets done. No office man ever sees that anything gets done. It doesn't happen anywhere in the world. So why will it happen in our offices? You know what I'm saying? Managers get something done. People sitting in offices, they push papers. Once the papers are pushed, unless somebody goes out and does it, nothing happens.
Send files.
You can send files? Great. Okay, so it means, yeah, you push that little button. So, okay, then you're button pushers now. Instead of paper pushers, you're button pushers. So now you've pushed all the right buttons and not pushed anybody's buttons. And so then, now what? It sounds great. And the person who's saying this themselves can manage something. But in this whole system, who can do this? Who's pushing it? Who can do this? Gopal Bhatta could do it and Kontiya can do it. That's two people. All the rest of them will sit in the office, type on the computer, and never practically see that it ever hits the ground. Those two people can do it. One runs a business with 2,000 people. The other one was, you know, going around and seeing this Namhata thing went. But when was he in the office? He spent some time in the office, but he has to spend it in the field. If he spent more time, once the thing's made, he spends more time in the field, you'll get more results. He's not going to get more results by spending more time in the office. So they're creating the office people, but they're forgetting the people that are going to do it. And the people going to do it, then they say they shouldn't be doing it. So how is that going to work? Your presidents, your local preachers, they're the ones that are going to do it. But if they're the bad guys, then, you know, how is anything going to get done? You know what I'm saying? It doesn't have any logic. There's zero logic. You know, they're thinking by, if we manage, then suddenly the mission will go on. No, the mission simply needs organization. The mission is there, you organize the mission. But the getting rid of the mission to organize. See, because the problem is you should be preaching, you should be studying, you should be doing all these things. Prabhupada doesn't mention sitting around in an office. So, therefore, if we get rid of all these other things, then standing around in an office has some validity. But once you get rid of all these, there is no mission to manage. So, in other words, you know what I'm saying? It'd be like this. If you had a temple, and the temple, what it did was send out the brahmacharis to collect money so you can maintain the temple, right? So that the brahmacharis could live there, so they could go out and collect so you can bring back money to maintain the temple. So they'd be, is that what it's for? So then the community, because they'll pay the taxes that'll maintain these offices, and the offices will make sure the community is there so they can pay the money to maintain the offices. It's the same thing. So what is the difference between this office and this temple? It's the same thing as far as managerially goes. So all it is now, instead of calling it a temple, we call it an office. You know, so in the deity, instead of being archa, you know, murtis with all these rules, we have computers. You know, and they're much more politically correct because the element of social nourishment that comes because they function on a motherboard. You understand? Like that. Well, there's other things. You have all these brahmacharis and all that. You know, like that. But you know what I'm saying? So the idea is that you try to bring out something to illuminate what's going on so that it will, you know, give clarity of what one's supposed to do so the plan will work. Because if there's no knowledge, how will the plan work? A plan has to work with knowledge. You can't. It's not just sentiment that you pick something. Right? It's supposed to be intelligent. Strategic planning is supposed to be intelligent by people who can actually analyze. Right? Does that make sense? So by asking a question, if that doesn't go out, so you have to put it into that light. You know what I'm saying? In other words, the presentation is about so that you can have the information so that you can be part of this wonderful attempt by the Vaishnavas cooperating together, serving how Prabhupada wanted us to work together. But you don't understand how this area here is like that. And we wouldn't want to be blind followers, would we? Krishna is very expert like that. You know, is that the first thing he throws out is something they have to agree with. You know, the first thing is, you know, no, I can't get this. Well, you wouldn't want me to be a blind follower, would you? You know, like that. You know, I should be educated. I should, you know, like that, so that I will be able to do this out of, you know, my own, you know, self-determination, you know. Like this. So you use examples or other things that touch on the aspects that you feel are the weaknesses, but the presentation will be through that which is considered to be the focal point or what's palatable. Does that make sense? You know what I'm saying? So at least that way then they feel you're cooperating and this and that, because if you're cooperating, then sometimes then you can have effect later, because after the meeting they'll go away, you won't see them for years anyway. But if they don't like what you're doing, then they remove you from that situation, and then they'll stick someone else in there who can't do it, and they don't come back for 2 years anyway to correct it. Yeah, but also the Mormons go out and preach for 2 years. It's part of their thing. It means either before or after university, 2 years they preach. They go out in the world and preach and not sit there at their home. They leave the city. No. These are people before they get married. Everybody goes out for 2 years and preaches. And in their basement, they have 2 years of food. That means if today all the shops shut down, you could eat for 2 years. You have enough food in your cellar to feed your whole family for 2 years. I mean, and nicely. These are also rules of this community. So then, you know, where's the food? Where's the preaching? Why is the Mormons the quickest growing in the world? Because every Mormon has to spend 2 years preaching. We don't have any rule that we have to preach. It used to be. That's why we were the fastest growing.
But it's enough to have enough donating members.
Enough to have donating members. But why should they donate to us? What are we doing that someone else isn't doing?
Holy Name Festival, seminars.
Holy Name Festival. Who's going to organize the festival? Because the office guys will sit in the office.
The temple will exist. And everything.
The temple will exist? You're sure? No, it's not taken from those things. But it's not taken from them. They only take from it what they notice.
Of course, yeah.
Because if they took what it is, there's people in there. The guys on the top actually manage. They get right in there.
In the Baltic states, so it's in connection with donations. So mm-hmm. they covered. So they
covered it themselves.
So yeah. And they're
mention that
paid,
one.
Yeah.
So yeah. They're and they're not paid. Ooh, there's no office. There's no tax. Ooh.
So
that means then the Mormons 10% goes actually to the church to maintain the building where the rituals go on, not the offices. The offices, they have to take care of it themselves. Ooh, that's... They missed that point.
In the beginning, when I was joining, and this word is also deleted from the vocabulary...
You can't join.
We are no more joining and no more blooping.
Okay, so what are we doing?
You don't bloop, you don't join. You just become a congregation.
We just exist. Do we exist? But do we exist? Is it an illusion that we joined in that? So in actuality, if you give up this illusion that you joined or not joined, then you know the element of existence is also not a consideration. So that sense of not existing in that material form, that will be what will generate your happiness. Is you're unhappy because you are identifying with a particular form that had a beginning and may also have an end. And because of that, you're materially suffering. Does that sound good?
Yeah, because
That was pure Buddhism.
If you don't join, you cannot loop, and then our numbers will increase.
It's like, who? So this is what they work out sitting around in their office.
No, this is just my interpretation.
Oh, okay. But if you don't join, you don't bloop. So that means the whole of Helsinki is already part of the mission. They're already Krishna conscious.
If they become a part of the congregation.
If they become a part, or become, you can become, but you can't join.
Yes.
You can become.
Yes.
So we have to become.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. And can you de-become? No, you can't de-become.
You can stop being.
Huh?
You can stop being.
You can stop being, yes.
When you leave your body.
Okay, yes. After, when you're dead, then you can, okay.
When you were coming, it was no question of like...
When you were coming or when you were becoming?
Becoming. There was no question of building a career or whatever. Devotees even didn't tell me this, like, don't go to work, don't earn your own money. But nobody even told me also, what about your future, how will you maintain yourself?
Yeah.
It was just a mission.
It was just a mission.
Just picked up, I have to join, there are so many others who do things.
Yeah, so they don't want you to join something, but at the same time is that you're joining, but then you have to have a card, you know, that you have, so how did you get that?
Pay.
But my point is, so anybody could pay. So a guy on the street could just pay, and then he has that, and then he can go stay in any temple, and that's better than life membership, right? It's only $10.
But not only me, everybody was doing it like that. People came...
No, everybody. He's saying now today the Mormons are still doing like that.
They sold the house.
You know what I'm saying? The Buddhists are doing like that. Everybody's doing like that. Only we have this idea, we're going to set up the West Wing, you know, in Washington, D.C., plus Congress, plus the judiciary, you know, the whole thing. And, you know, but at the same time, it's all going to be, you know, volunteer, but at the same time, everyone's going to pay. And, you know, we're not, it's not an occupation, but everyone will be taken care of. You know, it's like, you know, how did Washington, D.C. become like the epitome of this? Like, that's the organizational structure. And then, you know, then Utah, then that's the social structure. And then... any ideas for philosophy, what we're going to use? Or?
I just know it's clear from Prabhupada's books that he wants you to give your whole life to Krishna.
Well, that's because Krishna says that.
Yeah, so at least one can try that. So the logic is if you give yourself fully, and I've heard this preached to the people, if you give yourself fully, you have made much more steps that you can really... really maintain, and then you fall back, and then you're out of nowhere.
Yes, so they're worried about the ribbon cloud thing. So they're really worried is that, okay, in ISKCON, I have developed sophisticated because of Krishna consciousness. And then I have made the mistake, like everybody else, that materially I am that sophisticated. Right? So therefore, I should be living this sophisticated lifestyle and a devotee, and there should be some way to maintain that. No? But the point is when somebody unbecomes, you know, from the, you know, becoming part of the temple or something like that, if we're talking about that old aspect, where did they go? You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So, I mean, do I have to be blunt on this, or everyone can put together the dots? A little blunt. Okay. When Bhagavan left, what did he become? He was like the sun god. You know, we used to call him the sun god. You know, Louis XIV, he was called the sun god. So we used to call him the sophistication in this. When he left, did he have that sophistication? What was he doing? He was working at a business to sell square tomatoes because they can pack in a box nicely. You know, Paramahamsa, you know, very strong, powerful, you know, preacher and sannyasi, he was pumping gasoline. You know what I'm saying? So materially, where would they be situated if they weren't devotees? So my point is how is it you expect to have all this facility on the material platform in the sophistication you have in Krishna consciousness? They're two different areas. You know, it's just like this. It's just like, let's say, I have Italian lira, right? You know, I want to buy anything. You need millions of them, right? So now I come over, go to England, and in my mind, I have a million lira. Therefore, I've come to England. I should have £1 million. No, your million lira will be about £5. That's all it is. So on the material platform, you're only really valued at a guy living in, you know, a one you know, bedroom apartment, you know, with no car, and you got to take the bus. That's all you're worth materially, because if you weren't in the devotee, that's all you'd have. So if you look at it like that, that money we can get. But if you think you're supposed to have the two-bedroom house with the car, with the insurance, with the dental, and they pay for your kid because he can't go to just the regular school, he has to go to the special Steiner school, and you know, and because I have to take care of all these things, you know, I can only give 3 hours a day as the temple president. So then all these different things like that, and it works out. So, and you know, plus I have to go, you know, take the, you know, the family on vacations. You got to take your family on vacations. So, you know, this year we're going to Bali, you know, last year we went to, you know, where did that come from? Because if it was a karmi, he wouldn't have any of that. I'm talking about things that have been there in the past. So the thing I'm working on, the principle is that the people were managing, they did it at the time. The people were complaining, they weren't the managers at the time. When the big managers moved, then they kind of came in. And now, after 30 years, they're kind of like getting their oats and kind of situating themselves. But I haven't seen the mentality has changed, because they're still talking about, you know, things that went wrong in the 80s. You know what I'm saying? It's like, you know, who cares?
If I wouldn't join, I would have a career.
You would not have a career and all that. You might, you say. One devotee, he was from Peru, and he said that there's an area in Peru, one district, where the people there are very, very proud of their own self-value. You know, they really consider themselves really important, really special, and, you know, like that. And so the one Peruvian is telling the other Peruvian, he says, wow, I've worked out this fabulous business. We'll make millions. He says, what's that? He says, I'll buy one of these guys from this district for what he's for what he's actually worth, and I'll sell him for what he thinks he's worth. Like that, you know. So, you know, it's great profit. The margin is huge, you know. So this is the thing, is they'll talk about these special, but they don't have this. And I've seen the devotees, well, you know, I have to do this thing for the Mayapur project, and so therefore, you know, I would be doing this, I'd be making this much money if I was, you know, there, because we're professionals, that, so if you want me, you have to pay me like that. But if we don't pay him like that, he doesn't get like that. They talk about it, but they don't get it. You know what I'm saying? That's the thing, is they have this self-value that they're going to get that. But who was? And you can say, well, you know, it's ISKCON's fault because of this, that. You would have been there. Yeah, you were a hippie and you went to university and you were taking what as a major? What art? A general BA, and that would have gotten you what professional job? You know, now if you had gone to law school, medical school, you were an engineer or something, and you said, by now with the things, and I had top marks, you know, and my family, you know, they've always been in this thing like that, I would have gone in the father's business, my brother's in it, he's a millionaire now, I would have been like that. Then you can talk. But when your parents are just some people that are there, and you were some person who was there, and then you talk about this big thing, I would have been so professional. Where is this professional? Does that make sense? So that's the sad thing, is that we're projecting what is our material desire and then saying that that desire is our worth. No, your worth is what's Sankarshan, not Prajumna. You know what I'm saying? That's why strategic planning doesn't deal with Prajumna. It deals with what do we have? You know, so that means exactly, we have this many workers, we have this much facility, we have this much money, we have this much expertise, and so therefore we can get this kind of goal. So what's the plan? That's how they work. They don't work. They don't work in an illusion. Well, that's what I feel like, or that would be great, or wouldn't it be nice if everybody had like that? And you know, I'm saying, great, but then why only them? Why is it that the office people aren't the congregation, and they're just putting in some free time? That would be, now that would make sense. Okay, you have an office, and so therefore, then, you know, the local people, they put in their time in that office, and this and that, it doesn't cost you a cent. But no, the congregation just should just make money to give to this office that doesn't even have, it's not even there in your place. How would that work? You know what I'm saying? It doesn't make sense. Like he was talking about, Mormons here, they sell their stuff and then they do something for their mission. They have a big offices, and yeah, and how well is that working for you? How is Greece, just off the top of our head here, you know?
It's in a bad shape.
Yeah, and how much longer is a euro going to last? Right? Yeah, so that's the point. Dollar may be bad, but it's their own currency. You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing.
They made a rule how much certain vegetables should be curved. You know, what is the end of how they should be curved? And only these vegetables could be given on the market.
Uh-huh. And so how is that doing economically for the union?
Well, that I said that is their work. Well, they were solving the problem of animals migrating from Poland to Czech over the border and changing the ecostructure of the woods there.
Changing the ecostructure? No, it's always been changed like that. They've been doing that before the EU was there. Really, that's what they want.
That's one of the things.
No, but if you have that, you don't have your farms and this and that. Because a guy in an office can never run a farm. You know how many farmers in the EU are very frustrated?
They decide where the vegetables will be grown.
So that means someone who always grew those vegetables, now he can't grow those vegetables. Now he's a farmer. What does he do? Yeah, so then how is that protecting the people? So that means your administration is all that's important, and the life of that administration is your success. So it's not that administration is taking care of protecting the people. No, the people are supposed to take care and protect the administration. But they have no authority. Only the administration has authority. So what is the value of having such an administration? Yeah, because they sit in an office all day.
But they call them extremists.
Who? No, who's the extremist?
Those who think like this, that why do we have a European Union?
No, it's not a problem having a union. It means Yudhishthira Mars is the emperor of the world. That means then they had, why a European? They had a whole world union. So union's not the problem. But union means it's just like, here's each country, you know, takes care of themselves, and then they add something to it that is common. You know, there's some common element that they're going to support each other. Each country has its own economic thing. It has its own army. It has its own taxes. It has its own administration, because that you can run. But they all cooperate together, you know, like that. And then somebody is kind of the one who will call the shots on how they'll work together in case of need. When it's peaceful, you don't worry about it. But if there's a war or something, that's when then this head guy, he calls the shots. You know what I'm saying? So that's how you make a union. But where you just make everything like that, then that's called one country. But then the problem is they're transitioning between many small countries, trying to turn it into a big country. You know? But, yeah. But I'm not sure that they do that in America. Because there, the federal system means each state is independent. Each state has its own laws. In one state, you can get married when you're 16. In the next state, you can't. You know? So you have all these different things. They're completely separate states. There's common rules that they all have to have, you know, based on the Constitution, but they can interpret it however they like in their state, as long as the people in that state like it that way. So then, you know, so are they talking American? I thought we were talking American before. You know, now suddenly we're all EUE.
I'm speaking about bureaucracy. It's
okay.
Common field.
Okay. Yeah. Yes.
Perhaps, could you still a little elaborate where this, you know, using these karmic business methods to, you know, to be applied in our own Eastern leadership can, you know, lead like this, you know, increase of the bureaucracy and decrease of the enthusiasm and so on and so forth. Where would the slice, for example, let's say 70% highly
Where would the weakness come in using them? Because you can say the element of yukta vairagya, but the point is yukta vairagya means that there is the yukta or connection of your nature to Krishna, and that, you know, whatever that nature is, and then that vairagya is that the result is for Krishna, right? So the weakness comes is that the point is someone who's a manager should manage. Someone who's not a manager, they shouldn't manage, right? They should do something else, because every human being has some unique element that's valuable to society if he does that aspect that's unique, you know? So the difficulty comes up is then it's the habits of successful people. So it should be that amongst those who are successful, that would be discussed, because he's seeing these general habits. Now, someone has it more than the other, and that's why that'll be used as the example, and someone else is doing it, so they're getting success, but it's not their strong point. So now, if you got together all the successful people and discussed these 7 points and showed how this and that, then they themselves, who are successful, could then see how to improve on these points and bring them out more according to their ability. Right, because they have their karma and stuff also. But you might enhance those who are already successful to make them more successful. But to say that you're going to simply take the habits of those who are successful, you know, the material habits, and apply them to the material technique to another material environment, and that's going to change it, that's not going to work. You know what I'm saying? It's like okay, how did we make potatoes into chips, right? We took them, we cut them thin, and then we deep fried them, you know, and added some salt, okay? And all these potatoes that we're doing the same way, it makes it work, right? So the 2 habits of successful potatoes, okay? Cut thin, deep fried. Okay, add salt. Three qualities, 3 habits. Now, what if I take a zucchini? I cut it thin, I deep fry it. Is there anything left to add salt to? It disappears. So now, if I take the method of a potato and then I make this fabulous PowerPoint plan and, you know, things, visuals and all kinds of interactives and all kinds of other things for building trust and all that, and I fill the room up with zucchinis and tell them, this is how the potatoes do it, you know. So now, you know, if you do like this, then you'll be like the, then you'll be a fabulous chip. Will they ever become chips? Never. They can't. Why? Because they don't have that nature. So the point is they're trying to take something that is for one nature and apply it to another. The point is they should be discussing something else with those people who are in the meeting discussing the 7 habits. That's my point. Is that so? What are they good at? Right? So either they should be assisting those who do have those 7 habits and are successful, or work on the transcendental platform, which means they stick to studying, preaching, teaching, Because that, you know, they're intelligent, they can do that well. You know what I'm saying? The problem is that even though we discuss all this thing and being practical, you're not engaging people actually in their nature. So that's why it's not Dharma. And so the lack of discrimination is there at the same time as the element of authority is not creating protection because there's no responsibility, right? The children feel protected because the parents are responsible. They're the authority, but the protection is there because of, I mean, the security is there because of protection, because of responsibility. That's where the connection, not because they're the authority. So we're saying if we establish authority in this particular way, then everybody will be satisfied, but you're not protected. So how can you feel secure? So why would people want to support the system? You know what I'm saying? So the thing is it's those people who have that ability take responsibility for that aspect. So you have to coordinate to see that the spiritual standards of that ability are being first followed. Because if that works, if they have the ability, they will work out the rest. In other words, like this. I can guarantee that there's no actual cook on the planet who actually knows the science of cooking that ever fully follows a recipe. So you can hand them a recipe book, they'll never follow it. They'll pick and choose out of it. Oh, I'll take this. I saw the other day someone doing it. They just got this book. First thing they do, they looked at it and says, oh, I'll take the pie crust from there and I'll take the filling from here, but I'm going to do the decoration from this one over here. They immediately just put it like together like that because they're a cook. But someone who's not a cook, oh, you got to follow the recipe. Oh, no, this one thing's not missing. Oh, everything fails. So the point is that if you're a cook, you'll work it out. You don't have to have a committee of people who that's not their field make a book for you to tell you that, you know, your eggplant should be bent like this. You don't need that. You need somebody to tell you how to plant the eggplant. It's just like this. This is what you require. Is that, okay, if you use the normal modern method of, let's say, growing rice, you're going to take five shoots of rice and put it in one place because you're worried if one dies, you have a replacement. Fair enough. But the problem is that because there's five of them there in one place, even if one dies, you still have four. And so four of them are fighting for the same space. So that means none of them become that healthy, none of them give that much work. But between each one of them, so one plant gives one quarter of what it would give because it's fighting with three others. So so if you go way back in time, before all this modern farming, you take one, you know, how you say, shoot, or one like that seedling, and plant it in the ground, and then it becomes very healthy. So it's not working at 25% health, it's working at 100%. So that means it gives as much, if not more, than all four of them together. But even if you just looked at, if you looked at it from, okay, it gives the same amount, but the quality of it will be better because the health plant is healthier. Now that they could tell you. But where did they get that? From a person who's actually doing it. So all they're doing is the office can make those who are doing it aware of what others who are being successful are doing. That's what they can do. But the office can't create what's the best way to grow rice because they don't know how to grow rice. They're not out there. I mean, unless they're growing rice on the top of their computer or something, you know, in between the cracks between the keys. But that, you know, you need one of those military ones to be able to do that because then you can pour water and it'll grow. But, you know, if you do that with your PC and that, it'll kill it. So they don't even have the resources to do that. You know what I'm saying? So that means they don't even understand what an office does. An office either does bureaucratic work for a leader who is a direct practical manager. And therefore, between the direct practical manager who's above him, who's the office's authority, and the people below the office who are going to be carrying it out. Or they're simply connecting, you know, one practical person with another practical person. But in neither of those do we see that the office is the authority and that the office sets the standards. People who actually know the field, they're the ones who make the standards and they're the ones who do it. That's the way office... So they have this fallacious idea that the office itself is somehow or another magically going to solve all the managerial problems, but only a non-manager can think that. You know, and if you say, no, but, you know, they're running fabulous businesses, that's a business. You pay your people. They don't do the work. You fire them. And how long do you wait for them not to do their work before you fire them? Days, weeks, maybe months, but do you wait 30 years? So why haven't they been fired if that's the way it's going to work? So the thing is there is some connections, but it's not the same. You know what I'm saying? Just because I can manage my house doesn't mean I can manage a business. You know, just because I can manage a business doesn't mean I can manage a school. So we can say, no, he's a manager of a business, therefore he'll run the best school. No, he won't. He may be able to get nice donations and facilities for the school. As far as education goes, he doesn't know zip. So business management doesn't mean that you know you don't know governance. Governance means protection of the people, and I've never heard the concept, the term, the effect, or the desired, you know, that goal as any of the discussions over the last years as long as I've heard the terms being used. It's never the point, but the Kshatriya, his central point is protection. If he's not rendering protection, he's not government. So they're talking government. Where is the protection? So if there's no protection, it's not government. Maybe business, because we're talking about, we'll have the congregation will give money to maintain the central offices, who will do all this benefit for everyone. But the benefit is not protection. The benefit is facilities only. But they're not creating an environment in which you'll feel protected. But they think, if I had the facilities, then I'll feel good. But I think most people, become in this movement because they have or don't have material facilities and they see that the material isn't what's actually giving the satisfaction. That's why they became. I don't think someone, you know, becomes because they think that material facilities are really what's going to create satisfaction. You know what I'm saying? Because the original hippies, they were from those families that were successful. They were the kids of those families. But they saw that their family has all the money, has all the power, has all the influence, the social, but they're not happy. So they didn't want to go down the same path. So they're looking for an alternative. They didn't know where to look. But, you know, the first thing you do, according to if you play the Mayavad principle, is whatever the one is, you do the opposite and that's maybe get there. You know, they dress very nicely, so they dress like slobs. You know, they own their properties and everything. No, we own nothing. We share everything. You know what I'm saying? So they just tried it. You know, a couple of years it had some element to it. But then those people became, you know, the first ones to join, and those ones became the ones that were managing the society, which was successful because they were from the successful backgrounds. So those books that you're reading now are books that those people naturally did. But booting them out, then you're going to somehow or another, these people who are the zucchinis are suddenly all going to become potatoes? I don't think so. They never will. Point is, a zucchini makes a fabulous subject, but you don't make chips out of zucchini. So that's the point, is they should try to find what people are doing rather than, they're talking about the individual, but they're making everybody into the same thing. So that doesn't make sense.
The original principles and the lack of discrimination is ultimately already
Nirvisesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Desha Tarane. He didn't say, you know, the Mayavad, you know, the impersonalism of, you know, India and the voidism of the Far East, these are really a problem for the Chinese in India. So that's what Prabhupada is saving us from, right? Is that what the mantra means? Paschatya Desh means the Western countries. So the Western countries, though they don't necessarily see it as a philosophy, that is their lifestyle, because they see that you can make a material endeavor and it's successful because you made the endeavor. God's left out of that. That's impersonalism. Right? Does that make sense? So, don't understand is the basis of the Western culture is these problems. Right? And then now it's the pessimism towards, you know, leadership and this and that, but that's always been a pessimist. Everything, nothing gives. Committees won't give. This won't give. Money doesn't give. Family doesn't give. Position does. Nothing gives happiness. Somehow they're just enamored by committees and offices and desks and computers and ergonomic chairs and stuff like that. You know, so... You know, so that's... You'll also notice they'll never set those offices up in India. But they can't. I have seen so many offices. New crew comes in, new managers, you know, new to India, new to the scene, the big guys, the high rollers. They come in. The first thing they do is create an office. It's the first thing they have to do. They can't do anything until the office. So they pick out which is the thing after this and that, and then remove this one and that, refurbish it, knock out, do whatever it is, find the desk, find the right chair, get the disk, get the computers, put in the AC. By the time they finish it, it takes 3 months, they're gone. I'm not joking you. I've seen so many offices like this. The people who can manage in India, wherever they're sitting, they just manage from there. And then with time, if they need an office, they generally stick someone else in it, because who'd want to sit in an office if you're a manager, right? So therefore, you know, I've never seen it. So they can't do it in India. That's why they have to do it somewhere in the West, because there you can comfortably sit in your office and, you know, the electricity works and, you know, other things, so you can really feel something's happening in your office, you know. But then it's more expensive, you know. So maybe they should set up their office in like Malaysia or something, you know. So it kind of works, but it's cheaper or something. Or?
The idea is to have offices here in America and Europe, and all others show work for us for a very nominal fee. India, Malaysia, and others.
Good try, but they won't be successful. Yeah, yeah, as if. I mean, just like this. Could you imagine this? You are the temple president. So what would happen if you visited your temple once every 2 years and the way that you managed it was by sending emails? Would it work? No, it can't work. So now that's what you're attempting. You know what I'm saying? That's what's being attempted. Email is for memos. It was created by, I think, the Pentagon just to send, you know, we're going to have a meeting at this time or, you know, bring this or that. That's all it's for. Somehow or another, for us, it's like, it's what everything does. You know that Prabhupada, the devotees at one point, they wanted, you know what a teletype is? Huh? It's not a fax. It's a teletype. It's called teletext. Okay. Yeah, okay. So in America, it's teletype. You all know teletype? Teletext? It's these big monster machines. They're about this big. At least they used to be. Maybe they're smaller now. All it does all day is type. No one's typing on it. It just types. What it does is that all the news from Reuters, UTI, and I forget where all these other ones, see, anything like that, it all comes through there. And then the telecaster goes there and he looks at what comes out of the machine, because tons of stuff comes out, you know, talking about, you know, old grandmother got ran over by, you know, three, you know, Dalmatian dogs or something, and like that, she's in critical condition. So whatever is in the news, then you rip off which ones you like and you sit down and give the evening news, right? So that's what it does. So some companies would use that, so there'd be things constantly going out to all the places and this and that. So then the devotees asked Prabhupada, hey, let's put teletypes in all the temple. And that, I'm not sure how it functions, maybe through the phone system or something, so that then we can keep connection between all the stuff, between all the temples and everything like that, and that we can bring it together and make the management work better and all that. You know what Prabhupada said? He said, you'll just type prajalpa. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. So that's right. But I'm saying they still use them in the, news, or it's not entertainment. What would you call the? Your news agencies and all that's still used like that because it works. So the point is Prabhupada didn't want that then, though, was available. So why would he think now that we're going to manage by internet? You know what I'm saying? Says it's like it wouldn't work. I mean, whenever I hear people talking about meetings and stuff of these high-level managers, they do them in like 45 minutes and work out these big plans of, big companies. And some of the ones I've heard of two, they do it in 10 minutes. Because their point is, if you can't say it in one sentence, you don't know what you're talking about. Right? And then, so they come into the meeting, this is our idea, this has come up, what are your ideas? Because these are the top people. Write it down. They write it down on a piece of paper, hand it in, the meeting's over. Then the guy goes, the CEO goes, looks at it, this one looks good, he calls that guy, okay, what do you mean, explain it. And then if it was good, then he calls the next meeting, okay, this is an idea, any ideas on this? And everyone, like this. And so a couple of 10-minute meetings, and then they have this amazing plan. Yes.
I might be better vision because many times we can see also in the movie the big managers are lying in the beach and managing to the phone and all the things. We will not start to do some offices, but we will build some buildings on the beach, the shore, sea.
That's good. That's good. I think that. Why don't you bring that up at the next meeting? Why an office? Why not a resort? Because everybody can sit on the beach, just make sure there's good Wi-Fi and everything like that. Yeah. Then the main thing is then they'd have to set up an office to figure out which would be the best place to put the office, So, with Bahamas, because that's, still in America, or, what about Ibiza? That's a big place. I might even be able to do some preaching to high-level people. Bali is there, Indonesia, like that. You'd have some good place.
Hawaii.
A little laid back. Yeah, it's a beach, but it's a bit laid back. It may be too far away. The Riviera, that might work,
No mosquitoes and internet there.
No mosquitoes. That's a good point. Very good point. So that would limit your choices, right? So then your Indonesia and some places would immediately go out. Wow. Yeah, we definitely need an office to work this one out. It's big stuff. Yeah, be nice, Stuck on the beach and see. What they don't catch is that the guy spends most of the time in the office, and who wants to hear about him sitting in the office? So the only time you see him in the movie is when he's on the beach, like that, because otherwise everybody's in the office, like that. So they don't see the 12 hours, 16 hours in the office. They only see when he's at the beach. But then sometimes it doesn't also work from there because he's sitting on the beach and he's trying to tell the guy, sell, sell, what did you say? And then the thing, battery dies, right? So he doesn't sell. So then he goes back after 2 weeks and finds out that, they own, five million bushels of potatoes, which, they're not supposed to have. And now the potatoes prices drop, so now he can't even get rid of them. So that also does happen to the guy sitting on the beach. Of course, that's the difference whether it's a thriller or a comedy, right? So that they have to work out too, is that they want a thriller or a comedy, Or maybe a drama, right? Okay. Okay. Okay, what's the question? The negative doesn't
go out fast.
Negative doesn't go out fast. No, because in the material world, negative is the standard. So positive, you have to work for. Negative is, it's just like, which comes easy, chaos or order?
Yes.
Yeah, so that you do nothing, you'll get chaos. But order, you have to work. So therefore, for things to be positive, you have to work. You have to have knowledge. So that's why the Veda is talking. With knowledge, you make an endeavor. That's according to your nature, according to your duties, according to time, place, and circumstance.
And how do you, another question. How do you control your emotions?
How do you control your emotions? Best is by engaging them in Krishna's service, like that. That's the best. But other than that, is that it's also through knowledge. In other words, because it's the mind reacting to something, so the mind just reacts, so it doesn't think. But in times when you're not overwhelmed by that particular emotion, then you contemplate. So then slowly, slowly you'll start to think when that emotion comes up. So it means at least if you think, then when the opportunity is there, you can do something. But you also have the element is that you'll think about it, but it's only when it comes up, and then you get the negative reaction to it for not being dealing in the right emotional way, that you don't want that bad reaction. So then again, by contemplating, you can see and you start slowly convincing yourself. So, but you may only learn by getting the bad reaction, but because you know that's naturally what would happen, you won't be frustrated or distressed because you are getting a bad reaction. You know what I'm saying? You know that activity is not right. You know what I'm saying? So in this case, even if we learn simply by experience, but we've contemplated it by the intelligence, right? We're contemplating through hearing and learning and understanding, but we're only realizing it through experience. But then it'll work. It means if you could hear about it and therefore apply it, that would be better, save time. But even if we don't, still the experience should be based on the authority of. Is that okay? Okay. So I guess that's it. So we want to thank everybody for coming here and at least humoring us by, you know, not throwing tomatoes or cabbages or whatever's the local thing. And if we've been strong on points, it's simply to bring out the aspect. You should always remember that basically speaking, you know, the principle of authority in no way, in any condition, can be undermined. There's nothing will be successful unless there's authority. Right, so anything that would appear that was anti-authority was not. It's that if the point is as leadership, one deals in a particular way, you'll get the right result. You don't deal in a particular way, you'll get a wrong result. Right? If this was general devotees, most of this would never be said. And if a devotee said, "No, but the GBC does this," I'd shove it right back down their throat. It means I won't tolerate the general devotee speaking badly about the GBCs or the presidents or this or that. But when we're talking to GBCs and presidents, then we can say anything we like. You know what I'm saying? Because that's the environment that it's functioning in. Does that make sense? So I just want to make it very clear that this is not, there's no, the revolution is in consciousness and in culture. That's what Prabhupada says. It's a Krishna consciousness is a revolution in Krishna consciousness is a revolution in consciousness. But Prabhupada said we're going to take over the world by cultural revolution, not by administration, not by offices, not by committees, but by culture. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, could you imagine it? You know, Rath Yatra festival, big, you have a big stage and all that, and then the MC comes out and says, "Yeah, for you know this evening's program and all that, we've invited you know 12 people here. We've brought 12 desks here. We have 12 computers here, and they're going to sit around and work out some you know committee thing like this and that." And then everybody, "Yeah, great, how you about?" You know, they'll all stand and watch and like that. "Hey, he moved his finger. Oh, okay." You know, it's kind of like golf or something. You know, everybody sits there. Ooh. You know, like that. Does that make sense? So it's not going to happen. They're impressed by our food, our behavior, our dress, you know, the philosophy, you know, the dancing, the dramas. This is where they're impressed. But the thing is it shouldn't just be a show. It shouldn't be entertainment. It should be, this is our lifestyle. That's the difference. If it's your lifestyle, then, like Prabhupada, he is a musician. What did he attract? Musicians. And not just some small-time guys, big musicians. Right? His philosophy, he attracted those things. He spoke nice. He went to all the yoga stuff. He was doing this yoga studio preaching before there were any devotees. So it's not that we're thinking, well, that's the new thing and this is the thing and all that stuff. Well, Prabhupada was already doing that. He was already doing yoga studios, colleges, you know, people's homes. He was doing everything. So it's not, does that make sense? So the idea is that we try to take these things and see what's the principle and apply it in our life. Because as we can see, the detail, you have to have quite an ideal situation to do all these things. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, you know, that one thing, the Brahmin doesn't take off or put on his own shoes. That doesn't mean he doesn't put on and take off shoes. It means he doesn't use his hand to put on his shoe and take off. Why? What happens if you put on your shoe with your hand? That's the problem for a Brahmin. Now what does he do with his dirty hand? Touches beads, touches head, touches clothes. And now, can he do deity worship? Can he cook? No. So that's why a Brahmin never does that. So he'll have shoes that you just come, put your feet in, walk off. Take your feet out, walk away. You understand? So that's the principle. But if you're in an environment where it's, you know, 15 below zero, then you probably would want to have shoes that you have to use your hands to put on. You know what I'm saying? So then you have to know the principle is its purity, so therefore I'll have to wash my hands. You know? Does that make sense? So I mean, I remember saying a lot of senior devotees before, it's not so popular now, back in the 80s, they'd have this little spray bottle of something, you know, and so after they do that, then they wash their hands. You know, so they were always very aware of purity. And just now that I mentioned it, I have a good idea where they got it from. You want to know where they got it from? From Prabhupada's sister, from Pishima. Because when she'd sit there, she'd sit there on the chair and she'd always have this little lota with this little spout on it. And she'd be there and talking and devotees asking questions and interacting. They're always going to do something that they shouldn't, right? Because they don't know. And so as soon as they touch something they shouldn't, she holds out the thing to wash their hands. So she always would have that with her. She was super pure. She went into a bathroom. She'd use the toilet. Then she'd come out. Go into the shower, get a bucket of water, wash the whole floor of the whole bathroom, then take a shower, then walk out. Because otherwise you go into the toilet, walk out, walk into the shower, now the floor is dirty. Take your shower, you're clean. You walk out, touch the floor where the floor is dirty from the toilet, you're dirty. Then you walk out and then walk out all over everywhere else. So she would wash the whole place first, herself. And she was, you know, basically about the same age as Prabhupada. You know what I'm saying? So super clean. And this is, and you want to hear the best part? These were Vaishyas. So you can imagine the Brahmins. So the point is they got that from, because she was always clean, concerned about that, and always carried that little bit of water. Then they picked that up, because they were one of the ones that would always be around when she was around and Prabhupada was there. And so they do these things. So then you add that because you know the principle. So it's not that, okay, we can't wear the shoes, or, oh, that's all fanatic and bogus. No, it's you know what the principle is. In other words, a Brahmin keeps his hands clean. Right? You know, in a tropical climate, you don't need shoes that you need your hands to put on. Does that make sense? So like that, these things are there. So if you continue these and studying and all that, keep that in mind. What's the principle? Because as you go, you know, just as we've come across some wild stuff, you'll see more wild stuff. And especially if you want to get into criminal law, hold on to your hat. So, but be very careful. Don't get overwhelmed by the rules. The rules have a purpose. You have to get the purpose of the rule. It's not the rule itself. That's the rule itself is the natural form, and it works perfectly. But if the environment's different, then you adjust it, but not adjust the principle. So that's why a leader means he's smart. Like that. Because he has to create something. Right? These offices only work with data that's already there. They didn't create that. Okay, you have, you know, so many shapes of the vegetable. So this one shape seems to give, by statistics, does the best, what do you call it? People appreciate it the most, so they buy it the most. So if we want to make it the most successful, then we'll only sell this kind of shape, so that means we can only produce. But they haven't created that. You understand? So the office can't create anything. It can only kind of put together things that are already there. But a leader means he's creating the interpretation of how to apply it in that situation. And because he's a leader, it won't be the same twice. And that's why leaders are confusing to bureaucrats. Bureaucrats can't figure out leaders for beings. The thing that freaks them out about a leader is that they don't know what they're going to do next. That's always their complaint. And you always know what a bureaucrat's going to do. Nothing. And expect good facility. That you can get. Oh, Prabhupada says one more thing. Bureaucrat means to say no. Bureaucrat always say no. That's all. So that's so Prabhupada also addressed this before. Right? And then there's that famous one, something about, I can't remember the whole thing, but it's something about revolution, resolution, no solution, or something like that. There's four parts like that. So it's like, so he's already dealt with all these things, but somehow they were dealing with them as they're new and fresh and just came now and it's the latest thing. No, it's that's why we call it chewing the chewed. They've always done this, right? You know, when we get into here later, you'll see is one of the main duties of the king is seeing that the bureaucrats don't take advantage and harass the people. And if they do, he removes them from their position, and immediately the excesses that they have from getting more from the people than they should, he takes it away. The king constantly has to keep on top of bureaucrats. It's one of the rules. So who's on top of these offices, right? Okay. Does that make sense? Okay. Okay. So then basically we'll continue next year where we left off. You know? You know, so does that make sense? So we'll go through, because before I was trying to get down to the essential things and go through, but the point is without all this background behind it, the culture behind it, it makes it very hard to be able to make the right discrimination in applying it, because there's so much variety, like that. So therefore, we go through like this, and slowly, slowly, it becomes. Then, after this is clear, then when we get down to like Artha Shastra and Niti Shastra, that is technique and technical points. It'll make complete sense, because last year we tried, but immediately the cultural questions came up. Oh, how can we do that? And so then we had to go back to this. So I figured, deal with this first, so that you understand when we say that the king does this, it doesn't mean it's without all the culture that's there in Manu. Right? It just means this is the effective element that you focus on in the performance of the, in the execution of the thing. But your consideration behind, your mentality, is Dharma. Does that make sense? So like this, then over some years, you know, it'll go somewhere. So if you don't mind, then, you know, because everyone's limited time, so then it'll work. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jainatai Gaura Premanandi.